And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, I guess the natural question, Dave, is the speech. What did you think of Biden's State of the Union speech? Was it a State of the Union speech, really?
No, it was a campaign speech. It was an attack. Well, it was both an attack on the Trumpist vision of America and also a laying out of the Democratic Party's vision of America, or at least the Biden wing's vision of America. And as you noted before the show, the specifics weren't necessarily as important as the delivery.
Right.
Biden went up, took his time going up the aisle, got there, handed it the copies of his speech to the speaker and the vice president. And normally the speaker then gavels and, introduces him, and Biden just started to talk.
Right. Right.
He was rip-roaring ready.
Yeah.
And he didn't fade. He didn't fade. He had a good, his ending was as good as his beginning. And, it caught the Republicans off guard on the beginning. Went right after things.
Why do you think they were taken aback?
Well, they live in their own.
They may believe their own propaganda that he's a senile, doddering old man.
Yeah, they believe in their own bubble, and he was. So what they're left with was he was too aggressive. He was too divisive, as opposed to too old and doddering. He touched on a number of things, and he went, he went after the Supreme Court face to face.
I noticed that neither Thomas nor Alito came to the speech.
Yeah, they stopped coming a while ago.
Of
course they had their they figured they'll have their time coming up in April when they decide the immunity issue.
Well, that's right. They figured out a way to rewrite the Constitution without having to subject it to democratic processes by just saying that the various provisions of the Constitution mean things that nobody ever imagined that they could mean. And since there's nobody to contradict them with any power to contradict them, that's what you got. That's a really powerful anti-democratic situation.
Yeah. Well, there's the old saying: they're not final because they're infallible. They're infallible because they're final.
That's right. That's right.
And so, no matter how wrong they are, you remember back in the 19th century, they came out and said that the tomato is a vegetable.
That's right.
Biologically, it's a fruit.
Right.
But,
right.
Right.
So, but speaking of the Supreme Court, what did you make of the unanimous decision in the Colorado case?
Well, it was unanimous, but it wasn't. But
you could almost say it was 5-4.
Yeah, they really they weren't going to disrupt the electoral process over this lawsuit. And even though it was brought by Republicans, by the way.
Not only by Republicans, but by a founder of the Federalist Society.
Yeah. but they, the extent of which that they went, the four dissenters talked about that they didn't have to go quite as far as they did. They again kind of rewrote the Constitution.
Well, didn't they, in effect, invalidate Section 3 of the 14th Amendment?
Because, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, what they said was that unless there's enabling a legislation passed by the Congress, you can't enforce it.
Well, Section 5 talks about enabling, but...
No, but the Section 5 that talks about enabling talks about undoing the ban on the particular person having office.
Right.
It doesn't say you have to enable anything to get the ban in place.
Right. They've essentially said that it's not self-executing, and if it is, it certainly isn't by the states, yeah, at each state. I never quite understood that argument because even though it is Colorado that brought the suit, if they decide this issue, it should apply to all the whole country.
That's right.
But there were two things that kind of got overlooked in this decision. Number one is they never said this wasn't an insurrection.
That's right. They didn't speak to that.
Number two, they essentially subsumed that the president is an officer of the United States.
Correct.
Remember there was the argument because he wasn't, or the office wasn't among those listed.
Right. That was one of the main arguments.
Yes. And they essentially ignored that argument.
Right.
They essentially implied that the president, of course, is an officer of
right.
the United States. So in
effect, they didn't rule on what was proposed to them, and they did rule on what wasn't at issue.
Yeah. What else is new? That's what happened in Citizens United.
Well, that's how they rewrite the Constitution.
Yes.
All the while yelling about the dangers of activist judges.
Yes. Remember, just to inform our listeners, Citizens United was about a Wisconsin law that said during the last 2 weeks of a campaign, you can't run a negative ad that can't be against your opponent, something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't rule on that, but they came back and said, we want you to address a different question.
Right.
And then they reheard the arguments in the next term on that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say a precedent, but it's something that they've done in the past.
Yeah, so you have a situation where reactionary lawmakers choose the people who should vote for them and who can vote for them, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, being representatives of the people who can vote and do vote, period. And judges decide cases they themselves bring rather than the cases that are brought to them by the,
yeah.
you know, by the normal course of events. Is the cart before the horse here?
Well, there's a cart and there's a horse, but
yeah.
Whichever
No, but
way
it makes sense, right? Doesn't it make sense? Isn't this exactly what you would expect from a group of people who believe that you can't have democracy? Because if you did have democracy, the people would vote for their own interests, and the interests of the right wing would always be defeated because most people don't agree with them and aren't benefited by them. That's what Koch brothers believe. That's what all of them believe, really.
Yeah. Remember, going back to our famous book, Democracy in Chains, after 1980, the Koch brothers, David Koch was the vice presidential candidate of the Libertarians, and they realized that their ideas could never become majoritarian.
Right.
So they set out to set up, in essence, a plutocracy or whatever you want to call it, oligarchy, kleptocracy, combination of all three there. I have a friend that, quotes, I forget who said it, something like the fact that democracy will only last till the people realize that they can get the government to provide them with certain things. And then when they act like that, then they'll always vote them their own self-interest, like as if that's a bad thing.
Yeah, what's bad about that? Right.
Right. Of course, what it means is that the common people will take stuff away from the elites in order to promote the common good.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's what they do.
That's what progressive taxation is supposed to be.
Yeah.
But by the way, that everybody's all upset. Biden wants to increase the corporate tax rate somewhat, and the billionaires rate, and you know, but that's an old. They've been trying to do that for a long time, but he's framed it. He's framed it. You know, why should billionaires pay 8.5% when the firefighters and teachers are paying, you know, 20% and 30% on their income?
The whole struggle, the whole political history of the United States is a struggle to expand freedom, the civil rights of the average person, of the working person in the country. We had a country that for the first 100-some-odd years of its life, half the population were not citizens. Women didn't have citizenship rights. They couldn't vote. They couldn't serve on juries. They couldn't be officials of the government. They couldn't serve in the army. They couldn't sign contracts. They couldn't own property. They couldn't bequeath property. They couldn't even choose whom to marry. They couldn't get passports unless some man agreed to it. It took from 1789 until this passage of the suffrage movement amendments to empower, to make citizens of half the population. And you can go down the line, different parts of the population, one after another. The struggle is to extend civil rights to the people who live in the country. Yes. And the reactionaries constantly want to stand in the way of that. Yes. This guy who's running on the Republican ticket in North Carolina wants to go back to the America where women did not have the right to vote. In other words, the 19th century. That's typical of the Republicans. That's the Republican vision. Make America great again? That is, in today's terms, fascism. It is the undoing of all of the political and social struggles of American history. So that the people and the forces, the class forces and the interest groups that were defeated and freedom's definition was expanded, all of them should now come back and be victorious, and freedom's expansion should be strangled.
You know, you're going through your litany of things that women couldn't do. It sounded a lot like Saudi Arabia and Iran, except for the stonings and the hangings. You know,
I know. We had dunkings, right?
And yeah, we had witches burned. Well,
burned at the stake. Yeah,
they were hanged. They were actually hanged, but yeah.
We had the dunking. Dunking was just a way of drowning people.
Yeah, I mean, if you survived, you had to be a witch, and if you died, you were pure.
That's right. But all right, that didn't happen after the Constitution was formed. That was only the gestation period, but it carried forward.
Yes,
the attitude carried forward. Anyway, we had lynchings. Oh, you know, that's in the 1940s. The Congress refused to pass anti-lynching legislation. Harry Truman refused to support anti-lynching legislation. That's a fact. The struggle for the expansion of freedom for the average person in the country always means that some interest groups' current liberties are going to be restricted. After all, when the food companies had the right to put sawdust in bread, and then the Food and Drug Act was passed to prevent that, the commercial bakers to put sawdust in bread was curtailed. That's true.
Yeah.
Property rights do get curtailed in the expansion of freedom. Now people are going to demand health care, health as a human right, health as a right of citizenship. That means that the drug companies can't profit over on people's illness. That's a restriction on their freedom. That's true.
Well, it's not they can't profit. They can't profit to excess to the point where
you can't
avail themselves of life-saving drug.
Yeah. Or doctors.
Right.
In the rural areas, which is where I live and where you almost live, you know, there's a health crisis. We don't have medical care here. If you look at the medical care per capita in the rural areas of Pennsylvania, it's on a par with Haiti. The actual count. If you go to New York State, which everybody would say, oh, that's a rich state. More than half the doctors in New York State practice in one county in an area that's 1 mile in extent, Manhattan, between 34th Street and 60th Street. Half the doctors in the entire state practice there on two blocks. Now, what about the rest of the state? There's 26 million people in the state. What about the rest of the people? Their health care is abysmal. Go up to Binghamton. You don't have the kind of health care you have in Binghamton that you have in Manhattan. It just doesn't exist.
No, but Binghamton's
a big city.
Binghamton's a little bit better than where you are. But
exactly.
Still.
Exactly.
I mean, you'll get some at Syracuse, you'll get some in Rochester, you'll get some in Buffalo. But beyond that, it's rural.
That's right.
Pennsylvania's rural.
That's right.
You know, they'll have these outlying clinics, that can treat sprained ankles and things like that. But
in my county, a woman can't give birth. There's no obstetrics care. You want to give birth, you got to go to either Binghamton, you got to go to Scranton. That's 30 miles away.
No.
30 miles from me. I live on the highway. If you live deeper into the county, it could be an hour away.
Yeah, I mean, from my office to Montrose takes the better part of an hour.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have these two visions of America.
Did you listen to Katie Britt's Republican speech?
I was just going to say that. I mean, she continued this dystopian view. And that is, you mentioned authoritarians, that is also their view. They want to make things seem as bad as they can make them seem in order to say, elect me, I can correct all of these bad things. And that's the game they play. You know, and you hear it from Donald Trump, America's terrible, terrible, terrible. And meanwhile, this week there's, another 275,000 jobs created.
And they're constantly going on about the rise in crime, where the actual numbers are that the crime rate is severely down.
What you've had
sharply
is a rise.
Down. Yeah.
What you have is a rise of the emphasis on the crime that does exist.
Right.
And not to say that you should be worried. I mean, look at New York State. This week, the governor put the National Guard in the subways.
Yeah, but crime in the subway is way down. There is no crime wave in the subways. Crime in the New York City subways is very, very low.
It's just that it's very, very, it gets a lot of attention.
It gets a lot of attention. And the governor caves into Republican propaganda. She wants to show that she's as tough as they claim they are. What they ought to show is the Republicans are lying. The crime, the so-called crime wave, doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's just that when individual crimes do happen, as I said, they get overemphasized.
That's right. But you know, this is a big country, and at any given moment in the 50 states, something horrible is happening. If that's what you pay attention to, there may be 50 items that you can pay attention to that'll fill up the news, but that's not what's going on in the country.
Yeah, but Alabama has a higher crime rate than New York.
That's right.
Things like that.
That's but right.
You don't hear it because that's a red state. They don't talk about those.
New York is a drug capital of the world. Meanwhile, there's more drug deaths in Susquehanna County, rural county, per capita than in New York.
West Virginia.
Yeah, West Virginia. Exactly. These places that the Republicans rule, which they are unable to develop, which they don't even want to develop, which they want to just milk, these places of insecurity and hopelessness is where you have the social problems, which they then say, oh, we can cure them. They cause them. Not only can I not cure them, they can't prosper without them, these Republicans. They prosper because of them.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned West Virginia. We know that Joe Manchin has, after his listening tour, has come to the conclusion that he's not going to run for president on any third-party ticket. This week we had Kyrsten Sinema decide she's not going to try to run for re-election, which helps the Democrats. That's the first good news they've gotten as to the holding the Senate in a while. Dean Phillips, realizing that he couldn't even beat Marianne Williamson or no commitment.
Uncommitted.
Uncommitted. He bowed out. He bowed out, of the race. And
he made Nikki a nice Haley, speech in support of Biden.
Yeah, comes out of court. Nikki Haley bowed out. She did not support Trump.
Right.
But I expect her to come around on that, like they all tend to do.
She had, in the course of the campaign, said she would support Trump. She just hasn't done it. But she said she would. If he were the nominee, she'd support him. Just like Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell, who will take every insult. His wife gets insulted by Trump. And he still endorses him.
And he's got nothing to lose. He's not going to run again.
Yeah, he's done.
He's got done. But he's consistent, if nothing else, in doing the wrong thing for the country.
That's right. That's right. And that's why you get people like this guy Robinson in North Carolina. That's why you get politicians or people who become politicians like that, whose great vision of the future is a regression 150 years to the past and undoing all of the social progress that has been made in the last 300 years.
Yeah. Well, we've got some others with different visions. We mentioned no labels, but we have Bobby Kennedy Jr. toying with libertarians now. I mean, he's gone from being a Democrat to an independent. Now he wants to get the libertarian nomination, maybe, which would put him on the ballot in a lot of states and would increase their ability to maintain a ballot position. So it would be a marriage. It would be a shotgun marriage of convenience. But it wouldn't be good for the country.
He's never backed away from his anti-vaccine position, right?
Right. He's got some really weird positions. He's even seemed to have backed away from some of his environmental things. Ambition and ego are, great. Great motivators.
He can't imagine that he could get elected president. Do you think he does?
No. I mean, his own family ain't going to vote for him.
Well, Gosar's own family doesn't vote for him out in Arizona. Not only that, they make ads attacking their brother.
And he still wins.
But he still wins, right.
But that's a different, that's a house seat. I was thinking the same thing about Gosar, but... and there's other families. Stephen Miller's family denounces him, but he's going to be one of the main forces on the Trump view of America and immigration if Trump ever gets back in. And that's something that people don't talk about. It's not just the candidates. It's the team that they bring.
And in Trump's case, it's not the candidate at all because he's both too ignorant, too addled, and too lazy to do anything. It is the team. The whole point is the team.
Right. And the team that he had the first time around were not exactly the A team, but this team is somewhere not even B, C, or D team. You're talking about the Steve Bannons, Michael Flynn.
Listen, the Nazi establishment were hardly the intellectual elite of Germany. But they were smart enough to be able to cause the havoc, cruelty, and horrors that the Nazis caused. The Steve Millers of the world may not be the smartest people in the country. They're smart enough to emulate Eichmann and all the rest of that crew and do the same.
And the mistake, of course, that the intellectuals and the elites who capitulated to Hitler was that they thought that they were smarter than he was and that they could work around him and work with him and nothing untoward would happen. The industrialists, the IG Farbens and the Krupps, by the end of the war, when their companies were in ruins, They had a nice run for 10 years, but, you know, the ultimate effect, besides the what else happened to the world. And so we're still getting that in America. I mean, you look at Elon Musk cozying up to Trump and some of the other business leaders that you hear about, the big contributors, the guys from Home Depot, people like that. You know, they can't see any farther than their immediate bottom line. It's just a phenomenon. You know, to some extent, Hannah Arendt warned against it, or described it. And Ruth Ben-Ghiat, if you listen to her every week, she analyzes it in those terms. She shows how it's a repetition of the 1930s.
Which is why it's so dangerous when you get a guy like the governor of Florida, DeSantis, who doesn't allow the actual history of the country to be taught.
Yeah.
If you don't know what happened, Santayana said, you're going to redo it. You're destined to replay the errors of the past if you don't know about them.
Right. So we're still having book burnings and things like that.
Things
that make people uncomfortable. Realizing, of course, that's the whole point of some of these books, is to make people uncomfortable.
You're supposed to be uncomfortable with your ignorance.
Yes.
Right? You're supposed to try to understand how to make things work better.
Yeah.
When humanity didn't have the ability to do that, there was something like 40,000 years without progress.
Well, we, you know, that's why we have this other vision. And Biden's going to have to be leading the charge, and people are going to have to echo. Not just, you know, they can't sit back and say a pox on both your houses.
No.
That doesn't work. You know, there are elections in other places where the people were just too important. Their ideas were too self-important to involve themselves in a down and dirty political race.
That's right. There are no saviors here. You want to look in the mirror. That's your savior.
You have to save yourself.
Yep. And you can't do it by yourself.
No.
We all have to look in the mirror and realize we have to join our own visions of each other and work together with each other. Because the bad guys are powerful.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of money behind them.
And a lot of money behind them.
The Jeffrey Az gave $6 million to Greg Abbott. Art Pope from North Carolina was helping to finance the Haley campaign.
Greg Abbott raised $52 million to carry out his anti-immigration activities. $51 million came from one guy.
Yeah, right. Bobby Kennedy Jr. using Mellon money.
Yeah.
Is it Mellon's that were there?
Yeah, that's right. Pennsylvania boy.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for this week.
Well,
the campaign has officially begun.
It's a heck of a week, and next week will probably be the same. Maybe not as many specifics, but there's going to be a lot. You know, as you said, the campaign has begun, so we're gonna see a lot of things as a result of that.
Yeah. All right. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.